Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Well, once again, everyone, I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Agency, Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. And remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, my new book, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know, available now at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. Well, from humble farm roots in rural Minnesota, David Ellison has come a long way, literally and figuratively, to conquering stages around the world as bassist of thrash metal titans Megadeth. Revered for his unique hard-hitting playing style and unwavering dedication to his musical craft, Ellison has woven a vast professional tapestry as a bassist, songwriter, record producer, clinician, and author. As a member of Megadeth, he has been awarded 10 Grammy nominations, countless gold and platinum records, and toured the world for the better of three decades. In addition to Megadeth, David has lent his playing and writing abilities to several other recording and touring projects, including Soulfly, F5, Temple of Brutality, Altitudes, and Attitude, and Metal Allegiance. Ellison, who holds a bachelor's degree in business marketing and continues to lecture on a variety of music and business-related topics, has also ventured out into other related forays as president of record label EMP Label Group, Ellison Music Productions, and with his own coffee brand, Ellison Coffee Company. Please welcome bassist, songwriter, co-founder, and second longest-serving member of heavy metal band Megadeth, author, entrepreneur, and a true Renaissance man, David Ellison, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, David.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Man, you took that degree and ran with it, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I got to say it off. You know, in my mind, I always think like I haven't really used it yet. You know, because I haven't had to walk into a, you know, IBM or Oracle and check the box with an application that says, hey, can, you know, job application, did you get a degree? Check, yes. You know, but I guess now listening to you read my bio, I actually need to update it a little bit, some other things, but yeah, I guess you're right. I guess the, I've always said going to school isn't so much about learning things as it's about training your mind to think differently. And I guess, you know, to go from being raised on a farm to being a bass player, and then I guess going to school and learning how to become a vested entrepreneur, I guess maybe school did pay off after all.
I think it did. Man, you got Ellison Music Production, Ellison Films, the Ellison Book Company. I mean, the list goes on and on, man. And I didn't know this. You know, I'm an author as well and an entrepreneur. I've owned several businesses in the past. But Rockstar Hitman, the paperback, man. We got to talk about this first.
Yeah, let's do it. You know, it's funny when you said that you have Rockstar Chronicles. It made me think that my new book, Rockstar Hitman, The Sledge Chronicles.
I saw that.
Sledge being the central character of my book, The Rockstar and the Hitman.
Right.
It's a fictional autobiography. So when you open it up and you start reading it, you would think you're reading a memoir from a rock star.
Uh huh.
And then, of course, from the humble beginnings in the Midwest. definitely had to suffer those misfortunes myself, probably because the likes of Peter Frampton and Kiss and many people who went before me, you know, we learned, obviously, from some of their experiences, because the music business was, you know, in the 60s, they were kind of figuring it out. In the 70s, it was run very much by a sort of, you know, a much different sort of thuggish underworld. And now, of course, things are very corporate. So I've lived, you know, 4 decades of the music business now, to see these transitions. But, you know, in writing this book, I can bring, you know, a little bit of my own, you know, some of my own, kind of, you know, fun, you know, experiences into it, but, you know, with a fictional character, with a fictional setting, and of course elaborate. And the beauty of fiction is that, because I've written 2 of my own memoirs. I wrote My Life with Death back in 2013.
Right.
And then I wrote More Life with Death. It came out in 2019. So I've got experience writing my own story, you know, with my own voice, mm-hmm. by my own hand. So to write, with my own hand, someone else's fictional novel, you know, memoir was a fun experience, and it is a chronicle. There's going to be several more of these books. In fact, I'm working on book 2 right now, and it's fun. So now that we've got the storyline developed, we've got the characters created, it's now it's fun to just keep exploring and expanding on that, because obviously with fiction, you can really turn some really fun corners and really hook the reader and keep them dialed into the story.
Yeah, I've written nonfiction, but I really want to get into fiction and just go crazy, because I'm kind of a sci-fi guy. I want to kind of go there. But yeah, how do you find the time to do this? My Rockstar Chronicles took me 7 years.
Well, you know, it's funny. A lot of these books I write when I'm on an airplane. You know, I'm 5 uh-huh. miles above the earth, traveling to and fro, and that's when I whip my laptop open, and you know, I'm kind of alone with my thoughts in right. that moment. And a lot of these ideas, you know, both my first memoir, My Life with Death, you know, I'd done the interviews for it, we had it lined out, and then I largely went in and rewrote a lot of it mm-hmm. to just give it a more of my own voice. I basically did that from a flight from Phoenix to London. and, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I basically just wrote a book over the last 10 hours, you know. And same with More Life with Death, you know, I had a lot of a story. It came to me very quickly because we just basically wanted to update the memoir. So many things had happened, like you talked about with the EMP label group and Megadeth had won a Grammy back in 2017. So there's a lot of things that happened since my first memoir of 2013. And I think when you're writing a memoir, you know, my partner Tom Hazard always reminds me of the Marvel movies. And you always go back and you tell the origin story, because mm-hmm. that brings the new reader into the story. Right. And then you quickly then move on into, okay, now here's the new story. And, you know, I'm finding the same with fiction. You know, you're doing, especially in this case, because I'm writing this Rockstar Hitman is a, sort of based in a memoir, first person, you know, POV. And that was an interesting thing to decide writing fiction is, because I read a lot of fiction. I read everything from John Grisham to mm-hmm. Jack Reacher to, you know, all kinds of different stuff. But, it was interesting to go, okay, whose voice is this? You know, is this story a storyteller about a story and then the character weighs in with quotations, or do we just, it seems obvious to me to just have it be written in first person POV point of view that he would be telling this story, because I feel we were able to capture the emotion, the sweat, the fight or flight, you know, responses to the situations that happen within the book. So I find writing fiction, I've wanted to write fiction for mm-hmm. years, for right. 27 years, and I finally stumbled onto a story and a concept that serves me well. And again, I like it to John Grisham. You know, John Grisham was a lawyer. He then started writing fictional novels about law-based situations. And so I kind of took a page out of his playbook with mm-hmm. that. I thought, well, look, I've been a rock star. Sure. Let me bloomer on planet. You know,
yeah,
I need to start
exactly.
writing stories in a world that I'm comfortable and familiar with.
Now, does the book have dialogue from the characters?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah,
you know, a lot of...
There's a handful of characters.
Okay.
In it, of course, there's other band members. There's this creepy management agency that he's signed his wife away to. That he has to, he gets to be a rock star by night, but during the day they got some dirty work to do, and if he doesn't do it, unless he pay the ultimate price of his life and the life of his family members, and yeah, so it gets hairy, man. It gets deep, it gets hairy, and, yet the character, there's a levity to it. It's kind of funny. So it's not just a dark, harrowing thing, mm-hmm. We kept a sort of holy cow, I can't believe I just did that kind of levity to the thing too. So, which I think keeps a humanity to the character.
But would you like to sell this to Netflix?
I think it'd be a great Netflix story.
Me too.
I think that the storyline, this whole concept could be an amazing.
Definitely.
Netflix feature for sure.
Yeah, I'm big on Netflix, man. I with the COVID crisis, I've been watching tons and tons of series, movies, and all kinds of stuff. And this fits right in, man. I look forward to this.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, I think you'll dig it. I read a lot of books, and you can tell that they grab you. And there's some books that I've written, they're kind of like music albums. I've kind of heard albums and I go, didn't catch me.
Right.
I put it away.
Yep.
Suddenly out of nowhere, sometime later, it comes across my radar and I was still to go, wow, this is really good.
Yeah,
and I've had books like that too. I've had books that I read them, I'm like, man, if they don't grab you pretty much in the first 2 to 3, 4 pages, if it's not really drawing me in, I don't hate the book. I just put it down and go, not today.
Yep.
Maybe at another time. And I just put it back in the bookshelf. And then, sure enough, sometime later, I'll pull it out and go, wow, this is the right story at the right time for me.
You know what I don't like? I don't like fluff. I don't like a lot of fluff, where they're just trying to expand the story and they're not getting to the point, and it's just, just an extension of the book,
I read a book like that recently. I forgot if it was Balducci or it was a pretty big mainstream writer, and I felt like the book, it was probably, 400 or 500 pages. Mm-hmm. It was just too long. Just like a song. Don't bore us, get to the chorus.
Exactly.
Like, what are you trying to say here?
Yep.
Get into the meat of the song. Hook us, give us the
hook. Sure.
And even if it's a more exploratory, opus, magnum opus kind of song, it's like, it's better be really friggin' interesting, man, because you're taking a lot of my time right now.
Exactly.
I'm with you. It's like, say something. And I learned that with songwriting. Is this part really necessary, or have you already said this?
Exactly.
And if you're saying it again, like a pre-chorus to a second chorus or something, does it really need to be there? Does it really help set up getting to the hook, which is, chorus mm-hmm. number two? Is it really worth the time that you're taking out of people's lives to hear it? even though in the song it may only be a few seconds.
Yeah.
Reading a book, it could be excessive. So I just read a book like that I thought, he could have said this same story
yep.
and cut all the fluff out of this thing and not been so elaborative. And he could have said this in 300 pages when he took in 500 pages.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to keep the reader interested, all the way.
Yeah.
What about Dwellers? What's going on with that? It's a horror film?
Yes, we are actually premiering it. We just announced it yesterday, actually, on a live stream that I did on Facebook for Mad Monster. I'm doing an appearance, me and Drew Fortier, who he co-wrote Rockstar Hitmen with me, but he also is the one, he's the creative mind behind Dwellers. So we are actually premiering that film at Mad Monster Horror Con in Charlotte, North Carolina. On February 19, 20, and 21 are the dates of that convention. So we will be premiering it then. And then from there, we'll be probably doing some other cons and maybe film festivals and various things with it from there.
So what is that film about?
So Drew had this idea that the small little Midwest town, homeless people Mm-hmm. It's not that small because there's enough people that there's a homeless contingent. City, I should say, small city. The homeless people started going missing. They were living underground, and they started going missing.
Mm.
And so he put together a news team to go do a documentary on the... So the film is about a documentary team doing a story about missing homeless people.
Right.
And during the documentary, those people also start going missing. And then that's where it gets gnarly. You know, that's where it turns into, like Drew says, he goes, it's like Chud.
Right.
It's like Blair Witch meets Chud.
Exactly.
So they just to give you a kind of an idea of what it's going to look like.
Is it pretty scary?
Yeah, I mean, it's got shocking, like frightening, shocking moments.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the cool things is when you're talking about books and records, when you draw the viewer into a film, you know, what keeps you there?
Mm-hmm.
And of course in horror, we love slashing and maiming and, yeah. You know, and these kind of things. And that's kind of the hook, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, slashing and maiming is the equivalent of guitar solos in heavy metal, you know?
Exactly.
It's like the thing that sort of slaps you in the face and always keeps your attention, you know?
Yeah.
Or double bass or something, you know? So, I think Drew did a really good job. He's finishing the edits on it, and, you know, we were waiting for the right time to, you know, to push this out, and Mad Monster people have been very gracious to give us a nice platform to do that.
So where are we going to be able to see it after the premiere and everything? Once it's out?
You know, I don't know. We're actually figuring that out now because, again, now that things are kind of, sort of, maybe going to open up, you know, we're looking at film festivals and mm-hmm. things that may have opportunities for us to do things there. I mean, we plan on it going to a DVD format and then certainly putting it out on digital platforms as well. We'll know more after Mad Monster, so that's in about a little over a month away.
Okay. We have a big film fest here in Sarasota once a year. It's around April. I had no idea. I mean, Florida's been pretty liberal about opening things, you know.
Right.
Some of the concert halls are letting people in and things like that, so.
Well, maybe that's a discussion for us to have.
Yeah.
If you work, we finish the interview, yeah. But again, yep. Maybe that we'll have a chat on that. Maybe I can send Drew down there and we can do something around that.
That'll be cool. I can hook you up with whoever you need to talk to. Let's talk about the album, No Cover.
Yeah.
That it's a great album. I loved it, man. I really, really liked it. It's got some great, great cover tunes on it. It's very kind of eclectic, I guess, on the tunes you picked out. And it must have been hard as hell to pick out what song you guys were going to play on this album.
Well, honestly, I got to be honest with you. That was the easiest part.
Really?
And I say that because I just started spitballing ideas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll just use Megadeth, for instance. You know, when we pick a cover song, it has to, the first couple were suggested to us. These Boots Were Made for Walking was suggested by a manager we had at the time. We put them in Killing Is My Business. That same manager suggested we do the Willie Dixon I Ain't Superstitious, which Jeff Beck also had covered. We put that on the P-Cells album. So Far It's Good So What, me and Dave chose Anarchy in UK, being such Pistols fans, and we even got Steve Jones from the Pistols from in both Toronto. So things kind of started to escalate to bigger levels by So Far It's Good So What, you know. You know, we did a cover, we've done a Kiss cover that went on, I think, War Chest. We did Paranoid by Black Sabbath. And that was an interesting one because I remember I said right when we went in, we got asked to do a Sabbath tune for that Nativity of Black album. And we were actually in cutting the song 99 Ways to Die for the Beavis and Butthead soundtrack. And while we were in there, we just sort of banged out the Sabbath cover. And I right away said, let's do Paranoid, because I used to play it in cover bands growing up as a kid in Minnesota.
Oh, sure.
I thought it was pretty simple. I felt it had an intensity, you know, a nice push to it that would fit Megadeth's, you know, kind of down-picking guitar style. And it's funny, we then tried every other Sabbath song besides that one, just to explore the catalog. And then we finally came back, and Dave just started playing Paranoid. And then we all jumped in, and it was just like, there it is. Never listen to the bass player. You might have an idea, right? but it was funny that we landed on that one. It was great. Then we literally just hit record, and there it was, you know. Mistakes and all, including the mistake at the end when Nick, you know, played through the ending of the song and Dave yelling to him over the intercom, you know, to stop playing. And so we kept all of it, you know. It was just kind of a moment. But I use that as to sort of juxtapose how we approached No Cover, because No Cover was, you know, first of all, it's got my name on the door, so mm-hmm. I'm like, well, screw it, I'll see you at the moment. I'm gonna play the songs I want to play. And, you know, the first song I suggested was Wasted by Def Leppard, mm-hmm. because I just went back to my teen years growing up, and I thought, you know, let me revisit some songs that I like playing. And Wasted, Def Leppard, that was such a huge song, and it turns out Frank Hanna Tesla loved it. That's what he played on it. That song got a lot of really positive response from my peers, because we're all kind of the same age, whether it's Mark Slaughter, Charlie Benante, you know, all of us, we all kind of grew up, you know, with the same record collection. And then I thought of BTO, Not Fragile. That was, you know, that's really the song that probably I first really heard the bass, because it's the opening track of the BTO, Not Fragile record, which was a really key album in my early, you know, musical upbringing. And then it was actually Tom's idea to do Beth. You know, because Kiss Destroyer was this huge song to me, and he said, he goes, dude, it's a shame that we don't put a Kiss on here. My God, you're like, you know, Kiss changed your life. I mean, pretty much got you into playing rock and roll.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was cool that he chose that one, because that's not the obvious. I mean, typically, you know, you'd play Detroit Rock City or, you know, Cold Gin, or kind of one of these more standards by Kiss, you know. So I thought that was very adventurous for Tom to go down that road, and I thought he did an amazing job on it. You know, and that's another thing. You know, Nazareth Love Earth,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was the quintessential ballad of hard rock ballads mm-hmm. when I was a kid, and, mm-hmm. you know, and Tom wanted to do, we talked about either Quiet Riot or Wasp, but I said, well, look, let's do Wasp. I love Wasp. I love the sound of their records, and for me, Love Machine was the one, so we went with that. And so, you know, between me and Tom, we just kind of ping-pong back and forth. And I wanted to do Sheer Heart Attack. That's one of my favorite Queen songs ever. And because Bumblefoot plays in the Elephant solo band, and he's such a great singer, he you know, he just lined that whole thing out. You know, then we got to add Doro to sing on it, and Tom added a vocal to it, and, you know, so it was really a fun record to just really collaborate on and bring all of our friends in during a really, obviously, a year that sort of tried to divide us all and keep us at home and keep us locked down and locked up. We said, you know what, screw that. Let's all lock the door. Let's all get in a virtual room, if you will, and let's collaborate. Let's make some great music together. So that's, to me, that's what No Cover represents. Kind of a nice exclamation point, fist in the air at 2020.
Yeah, talking about Wasp, I just had Chris Holmes on the show recently.
I love Chris. You know, it's funny, Chris, and I've gotten to know Rodney now in the last decade or so.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's funny, we talked about religious things because his dad was a preacher.
Yep.
And of course, he had kind of a, and I would need to tell his story, but he had more of kind of a, dare I call it, come to Jesus moment.
Mm-hmm.
And since I rejoined back with Megadeth in 2010, we were on some festivals together in Europe during that summer. And so he and I got to become, you know, good friends over some of those conversations. And, but Chris is, yeah, it's funny. Chris and I have always gotten along well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've seen, the last time I saw Chris was actually at, in 1999, backstage at the filming of the Rockstar movie with Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
Yeah, Chris was there. We got caught up, and I know I love Chris, man. He's
a good guy.
Yeah. Great guitar player. He's, you know, he's like Zach Wilde. He's just got
mm-hmm.
this, you know, intensity about it that just makes him such a great freaking rock and roll guitar.
he's in France, and he moved there because all the cops kept hassling him in L.A. You know, he kind of looks like a biker if you look at him, and I think he's 6'6". So he is kind of intimidating, but he's such a great guy. I mean, we talked for an hour and a half.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, his one of his most famous moments is in the decline of Western civilization, the scene in the pool.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a very rock and roll moment.
Oh, sure.
But I know a very different Chris Holmes, at least when I've always hung out with him. He's, again, he's been nothing but a super, you know, bro guy to me, you know.
He's a good guy. He really is. Mm-hmm. And you talked about Rockstar. I just had Jeff Pilson on the show also, who was in the movie.
I love Jeff. You know, yeah. Jeff is, he and I, it's funny, we're kind of brothers from another mother. You know, I mean, it's funny, I've always gotten on well with Jeff. I had him on one of our live streams here this last year, and I actually, it's funny, I actually just did a cover of one of his songs. I'll just leave it there because I got to wait for the song to get done. Somebody asked me to play on it, actually. So I haven't done a ton of quarantine jams because obviously I was pretty busy with no cover this last year. That's my quarantine jam, 18 cover songs with my own band. But, you know, when my friends reach out, I'm always happy to collaborate because it's just fun to play with my buddies, you know. But, yeah, it's funny. So I got to dig into Jeff Pilson baseline recently, and I love Jeff. You know, it's funny, mm-hmm. Jeff, I can single-handedly credit Jeff with me becoming a Jackson artist, with Jackson Guitars. Mm-hmm. And I've told the story before, and I'll tell it here to your listeners. Is me back in 1987, me and Dave Mustaine and Chris Pullman, we went down to St. Judas Priest at the Sports Arena in L.A., and they were on the Turbo Tour. And Dokken was their support act who opened the show. And Jeff was playing a Jackson bass. And it sounded so good. I mean, I was so, God, that sounds good. And I went, like, I think, like, the next day down to, I went to the Guitar Center on Sunset Boulevard. And I walked in, and I was looking for, I was like, well, I gotta find one of these. And I saw one on a wall, and I pulled it down, and I plugged it into a bass stack. It was a Gallion Krueger head into a stack of a pair of Harkey aluminum cone speakers. Mm-hmm. And that, a whole new day was born for me. And I still, to this day, play a Jackson bass and my Harkey amplifiers and cabinets. And so it's funny, That one show with King Dokken was sort of birthed a new direction in my bass tone. That's my Jeff Pilson story. So Jeff will forever remain a hero in my book.
All right. I want to mention your musical partner because the guy has done so much with you. Tom, is it Hazard?
Yep.
Is that how you say his last name?
Hazard.
Hazard?
Yeah. Yeah, I call him Hazard. I don't know if it's right or not, but he doesn't kill him, so I assume that's what it is. Yeah.
Well, Tom, he's an author. He was a journalist, music exec. He was a radio personality. The guy's also done a lot. But let me tell you, he's got a phenomenal voice, man. He's got a great rock voice.
You know, and it's funny, it's not a voice I would gravitate toward or one that I would, if I was to put out a call and the classified ads for a singer, probably a voice I would hear in my head.
Right.
And it's, which is so funny that with me and Tom, we're these, it's funny, we, you know, Tom dubs us the Midwest Metal Mafia. He's from Green Bay out to Minnesota. And he always said, he goes, you know, as a kid growing up, I watched David Ellison move to Hollywood, and, you know, he became a rock star with Megadeth. And as Tom's musical, you know, leaning started gnawing at him, he did the same thing. He moved out to Hollywood. He got there at a very different point in time, like by the early 90s. And so the scene was very different, you know, by then. The scene I grew up in was pretty much gone by then. But so, you know, he got more into the business side of things, you know, the record label side, some management stuff, and, you know, and as I got to know Tom, you know, about 5 years ago, we met up, I guess it was probably early 2015, I think is when we connected, and, you know, I kind of knew him as a journalist. He was putting together this, this documentary for Shout Factory. Mm-hmm. We're re-releasing the Shocker the Wes Craven film Shocker.
Right.
I get up to Elmer, Mr. Nice Guy. And so, you know, Tom being a real musicologist and a real fan of music, and I love people that are driven by the love of music. You know, I've worked with enough people where, when they're really still passionate about, you know, either it's guitars or music, or, oh my God, you gotta hear this new album, and again, it's a business, and we're in it every day, we're working on it every day, and, you know, sometimes you just want to turn it off, and sometimes music just becomes a job, you
right.
know, and I think when you lose the passion, certainly a passion like Tom has, is it does become a job, and then it becomes tireless, and it becomes sort of like, oh, God, I have to go do that again, you know, and I never wanted to look at music like I have to do it. I look at music like I get to do it. And I always want to remain grateful and thankful for it. And I think Tom has been really, these last 5 years has really put some wind in my sails, you know, from that perspective. And, you know, it's funny. He wasn't on the stage with me. He was kind of more, you know, again, running the record label, helping put it. He was kind of more my business strategy guy. As we put together the coffee company, the record label, he helped us acquire the relaunch Combat Records. So Tom, you know, knowing my history and all this stuff, he's really, I think, brought the pieces together of my own legacy and my own life that really tell a nice all-inclusive story now, you know, and, you know, I invited him on stage one night. We were doing a solo tour that we had called Fate Story. And it was largely a clinic, but I had, we brought out some bands that were on EMP. We had them as my support acts. And I then would use one of them to be basically my backing band. So I would play, instead of playing to like an MP3 or a laptop or something, I would have a real band behind me.
Right.
And that's how this whole Elephant band developed. And one night I said, listen, I want to play a couple of these songs, and I can use someone to sing them. And Tom goes, I know those songs. So I said, all right, we'll come up here, stand over there in the corner, and, you know, kind of sing behind me. And one night we were in Tampa, Florida, in late 1980s, in December 2018, and he goes, why don't we go in the studio and I wrote a song with our band? And so we did. And that first song was Vultures. That we put out last year on the Ellison Sleeping Giants debut album.
Right.
And from there, you know, Tom and I went to Europe, to UK and Europe, and I have another backing band over there that we work with when I tour over there. And Tom said the same thing. He goes, why don't we today at rehearsal, let's write a song with these guys. Let's write a new tune. And we did, and that became, Simple Truth, which we just put out back in April of 2020. And, you know, I found that, you know, again, Tom has a very different, because he's younger than me, he's 10 years younger than me, so he has grown up with a different style of music, you know, Korn, Rob Zombie, not really death metal, but just a harder edge to the vocal sound. I grew up with things that were very clean.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with Styx and Kiss and, Sweet and, you know, Journey and, you know, Molly Hatchet, you know, these things were around.
Right.
These were very clean singers, you know. Tom's era of music was really raunchy and dirty and in your face and much more aggressive. And so that's the nature of Tom's vocal sound. And I thought even with the No Cover record, it was fun to have Tom be the anchor, but then we could pepper in other guys like, you know, Brandon from Crobot, Mark Slaughter. It was great to hear Tom and Al Jorgensen. In fact, Al told me, because, dude, I don't know what I'm going to add to this. Your singer's great. And so, you know, I said, well, man, you're Al. You know, you'll do what you do. So it's really fun to Al just kind of put his own unique sound on it, as you would expect. And, I mean, that was really a fun collaboration, you know, as we're all, I mean, this became such a collaborative thing.
Well, you got Bumblefoot as a guitarist on many of the tracks, which he's incredible. Tom did a hell of a job, man, on Rebel Yell.
Did he? It's funny, that song, remember Andy Martin Jelly, our guitar player, suggested that. And Tom was like, yeah, look, a lot of people have already covered it. Like, we'll get to that, you know? And but I love it. I mean, the real, you know what? People sometimes in interviews will ask, what are the three albums you take to a desert island, you know? And that is always one of them. Usually that, yes, 90125 and probably Kiss Destroyer, you know?
Right.
Those are,
right.
If I had to pick them today, those are the three I'd pick. But that Rebel Yell album is almost always in that list. Because top to bottom is just an amazing record. And I agree. I had so much fun just recording the bass, and the bass is simple, but it really has to be played well. And it really, there's little pushes and downbeats and you know, there's, it pockets in the drums. So as simple as that bass line is, you know, nothing is easy if you do it well.
Mm-hmm. True. You know?
So, you know, I think there's a lot of sort of bedroom shredders, and I grew up with it myself in the 80s when everybody was tapping and shredding and, you know, Eddie Van Halen's blowing the roof off the guitar, you know, side of things, and I had Jaco Pastorius' bass, you know, virtuoso. You know, everybody wants to kind of do this virtuoso thing, and they're great, obviously, it's wonderful, but, you know, even Van Halen, I think of like the song Fools on Women and Children First, or, you know, Running with the Devil, you know, it's the riff that that anchors you, you know, and these riffs are great, and they're simple, and they're, you know, and so Rebel Yell is one of those songs, you know, it's this layered, the Rebel Yell is, when you break it all down, it's a bunch of really simple layers that fit together like a puzzle, and they're just meticulously crafted, well played, obviously, but just meticulously thought out in how simple they are. It's like when you look at a Rubik's Cube, you go, oh, that's easy. Until you start turning the colors, you go, oh, shit, what did I do?
Yeah.
How do I get back to, how do I, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's what I love about great songs, and that's when you realize when songs are great, is that on the surface they sound pretty simple, and they're common for everybody to like, as Rebel Yell is.
Yep.
But when you do a deep dive and you get down into it as a you know, a recording artist, you're just like, wow, man, there are just incredible layers here that just weave together so well, the mosaic of this song. And you're right, I think Tom, for his voice, he brought out a sensitivity and a softer side of him that, quite, I'm not going to lie, I've been wanting him to go there. Can you pull it back a little bit? And a lot of it is just finding the right song, which creates the platform to do it. And I've done no cover. Tom, he'll be the first to admit it. I mean, with Beth and Rebel Yell and stuff, I mean, Tom went to places, you know, that he has not gone to before as a singer. And, you know, again, when Tom moved to Hollywood, he kind of got drawn more over to the business side of things, and Wes is as a writer and a producer, but he's produced a bunch of stuff. And, you know, so it's, you know, I deal with Tom, and I'll write a riff, and he'll just start singing a lyric and a melody. I'm like, dude, that's really good. Like, it's fun to watch that just come out so naturally. And that's, I think, where our collaboration lies. You know, I've written some things that he's not feeling too. You know, he's like, the more shreddy, faster, thrasher stuff is not Tom's wheelhouse.
Right.
So I don't go there with those songs. When I write that stuff, I kind of soak that to the side, take that over to other things, you know. But I think with the Allison Band, we've found our sweet spot, and now we're working on the original songs for the next album to come out probably later this year.
Awesome.
It's fun when you kind of know your parameters, you know. And I think now three albums into this with Ellison, I think it's fun to explore within our parameters now.
Yeah, I think you got something here. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's three albums. You know, Mike Portnoy, it's funny, when I was working with him with Metal Allegiance.
Yep.
Because we were working on Metal Allegiance album too. You know, the first one, and Mike said it best, he goes, it's the first album, because you're friends, you're having fun.
True.
It's, you know, it's like the first few dates. It's like, oh, this is great, we're in love, this is amazing, you know? And then if you go down that road and you deal with that, then you start to kind of find everybody's humanity and their frailties and the things you do and you don't like about people and how they play and how they behave.
Yep.
And then album two, you know, sometimes it's challenging. You're like, oh, God, okay, yeah, that's right. I got to deal with this again. You know what I mean?
We're just keeping fun, man.
Mike he goes, my experience is album 3 is the real trouble. He goes, most fans don't get to album 3. You know? And I thought about that, and the fact that the Ellison Band is getting now, we're on album 3. You know, it's almost completely, we're really taking our time on a few things because we're really exploring some things, and but half of it mixed. It's mostly written. Tom's recording vocals this week in Madison, and you know, I've gone. Yeah, you know, now we've gone. We're through the channel. You know what I mean? And we're kind of on the other side of a lot of the humanness of it. We're just really getting back into the creative structure again. It's really, really cool.
Is that what happened with Metal Allegiance, or what happened there?
Yeah, largely, you know, I mean, you know, the first album, and of course, Metal Allegiance, by its nature, is meant to be very broad and very all-inclusive to the metal community, and, you know, so to write songs and records that, you know, you pull that many guests in, that in itself becomes part of talent.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still, you know, good friends, and we plan on playing. What we found with Metal Allegiance is that it works best in these big events, like when we were on the cruise ships. There was always an annual show in January at NAMM, which, of course, this year is not going to happen. Normally, we'd probably be gearing up for a Metal Allegiance show this week if there was going to be a NAMM this month, you know. But NAMM is virtual this year. There is no convention in Anaheim, per usual. So, you know, we found the Metal Allegiance just because of everybody's schedules and the size that it grows to. You know, it's this kind of we are the world of heavy metal. It turned into more of a big event, and those are usually a lot more fun with that. And you know, touring things is challenging because there's a lot of expense, there's a lot of logistics and just stuff, you know. And you know, touring right now, I mean, is, you know, it's off the table, you know, for everybody right now. So you know, look, Metal Allegiance, you know, we'll keep going. It's just it in itself has to work around a lot of schedules and logistics. So we realize it's not worth pulling our hair out over. It's best when we can make it fun, and when it comes together, it usually comes together big, and it makes a pretty big noise.
What is Lucid?
So Lucid is interesting. That is a record. Drew Fortier was writing some songs with Mike Heller from Fear Factory.
Right.
And I hate Delta Poison Raven. And last summer they say we'd want to play on a track. And I said sure. So they sent it over, and I copy paste on it. I was like, well, this is really good. It's more of a kind of a active rock radio sound. You know, it kind of goes, I don't know, Alice in Chains meets Chainsaw or something, right? It's not a metal thing, but it's a really clever, really good sounding hard rock thing. And he said, well, do you want to play some more stuff? I said, yeah, look, sure, why not? I said, look, I got other stuff I'm doing. I can't go join another band, but I'd be happy to, in this time, certainly put bass down on some stuff. And then I did. Started playing on it, and then, Dabrowski, who is the singer of Sponge, started, you know, writing some vocals and singing on some stuff. I was like, wow, this is really a clever sound. And quite honestly, it the songs are sort of a soundtrack to the Rockstar Hitman book.
Oh, cool.
And Drew worked with Vinny on, you know, crafting some lyrical concepts around the book.
Mm-hmm.
And again, since the book's a series, it's not just a one-time thing. You know, it became sort of this sort of made-up band, you know, as a soundtrack to this made-up rock star in Rockstar Hitman. So, the record is mostly done. I went to LA back in July and worked with Mike Heller's studio, and me and Drew and Mike were there. I played bass. Got to play bass on like 10 songs in 2 days, which was, you know, super fun. Very creative, actually. But my God, Vinny came out, and you know, here just meeting him, he's such a cool guy, and he's a, you know, he's such a rock star, you know, and so yeah, this that record, I don't know, we'll see where it fits and where it belongs in the scheme of things. You know, obviously I got some stuff coming up, you know, between a Megadeth record coming out here at some point, when the world opens up, and then I've got the Ellison record. You know, but for me, I think a lot of this is just to say yes, get in the room, make music with your friends, and
sure,
kind of figure the rest of it out later, you know?
Well, do you think Lucid could be the theme song for your Netflix series?
Yeah, absolutely. No, without a doubt. Without a doubt, yeah. You know, funny, there's that, what is that song, the site? You know, that show site that had many seasons. It was on, I think it was on Amazon.
Okay.
My kids used to watch it. I think it was on, like, TNT or something. Mm-hmm. It was on a cable channel, and then now I know it's on Amazon. So the producer, maybe the producer, the director of that series actually has a band, and he wrote the theme song for it. It kind of sounds like the theme song to Friends.
Yes.
You know, uh-huh. it kind of sounds like Weezer a little bit. You know, Weezer, yep, meets Friends or something. And I thought it was very clever, man. He wrote the song, and there's a really a great musical background to it. You know, it's kind of like Cobra Kai, of course. Has great music to it, you know. It's you know, it's really like 80s rock, and it's, you know, drinking beer and bars and karate and chicks and rock and roll. You know what I mean? It's like an 80s American soundtrack, you know. So I like the sound of that. So yeah, that is exactly where Lucid. That's how Lucid was created. And even the name of the band sort of ties into the, you know, to the Rockstar Hitman book and sort of some of the, you know, escapades of the book.
That is the book out now, or is it coming out?
It is. Yep, it's
out. Yeah, 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 I want to buy the book.
It's available on Amazon, yeah, as well as BarnesandNoble.com.
Okay.
It's BNN.com. So yeah, and there is a hardcover available through Blurb. It's very expensive, just to let everybody know. I've self-published some stuff to Blurb before, and they do a great job. It's high gloss,
okay,
it's expensive, but I would recommend probably, you know, again, Amazon and Blurb Amazon and BNN.com are the best portals for that.
All right, I tell you what, we can either each of us buy each other's book on Amazon, or we can trade.
I'll support the cause, you know.
Yeah.
I buy all my friends' music. I got my Apple Music subscription, and I buy stuff. So when I'm on an airplane and I don't have Wi-Fi, I can listen to records. I buy my own records, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want my own in my phone, and so I'd be happy to buy your book.
I appreciate
if
that.
If you're willing to do the same.
I'm gonna do it tonight.
For the amount of money that we'll pay the U.S. Postal Service for books back and forth, I'd rather just buy your book and you get all the money.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, my sister-in-law was a big Paul Revere and the Raiders fan. And she had the original albums from Paul Revere and the Raiders. And I met Mark Lindsay backstage after a show. And I brought him like four or five albums that she gave me to give to him that he did not have. So, a lot of guys don't have their own stuff, you know? You're right about that.
Well, it's funny. I don't have some early stuff, too.
Right.
And in fact, I was just dialoguing with somebody who was looking for some Megadeth stuff, and I actually had to do some deep diving. I had to contact some people in the Megadeth camp or Webmasters and a few people to go, okay, how do I find this? Like, where is this? And then I found it. It was the original demo from the very first three-song demo that we had, and I found it up in San Francisco with a guy that used to run our fan club. So I deep dive in around this stuff myself. Sometimes I go, God, you know what? I don't even have a copy of that. You know,
I'm going to email Jody Best the link, you know, to my book, and maybe then she'll send it to you so you can.
Yeah.
But I'm going to buy yours tonight because me and my wife are both heavy readers, and we'll really enjoy that. I mean, you got the trifecta, okay? You got the book. I'll drink your coffee while I'm reading the book, and then I'll listen to your music. I mean, come on.
Yeah, we're trying to kind of put the whole thing together. Yeah, you got the soundtrack, you got the visual.
It's unbelievable.
You got stuff to drink. Yeah. Exactly. I'm trying to take care of you.
Now you need your own. You need your own wine.
We got you covered here.
You need your own wine now.
Yeah, except I don't drink. That's why I do coffee. I did look into water at one point, though. You know, I do live in Arizona. I live right. in the desert. And, but, you know, I drink smart water because it gets rid of desert headaches.
Right.
So it's hard to replace that, you know. So for now, that's my water of choice.
Yeah, I'm a big coffee drinker, man. I drink a lot of coffee at night because that's when I do my best writing, you know. So,
yeah, right.
Yeah, and then I go to bed, right.
When the world is shut down and it's not dawn, I get with all of this.
Yeah.
You know, sort of right brain stuff. You can go over into left brain. I think that's what it is.
Exactly.
You create, you know?
Sure. I agree with you. Hey, Dave, this is your final question. And I ask this question to everybody. I get some very interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
You know, probably Eddie Van Halen.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, and I don't say that just now because he's passed. You know, that's a band that Megadeth never played with,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they were such an influential band for me. And even as a bass player, Eddie was an influence to me.
Right.
And I don't play guitar like him at all. If I play guitar, I'd probably play more like Rudy Schenker or Malcolm Young or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of a rhythm guitar player. You know, I'm not a lead guitar player, I admit that, but, you know, I just love his approach to things, his just kind of shoot from the hip, play from the heart, you know, I really admire how Michael Anthony, you know, played bass to Eddie's, guitar playing. There was a simplicity that anchored it, you know. Eddie used to really sing Michael's praises back in the day about just being such a great, solid bass player. And, you know, while that doesn't get a lot of spotlight, it doesn't get, you know, headlines, you know, while Eddie was getting the headlines, I always admired that he spoke highly about Michael and his ability to just sort of anchor the band down, you know. And, so I that would be a fun experience to, you know, to have played with him, you know, even just for an afternoon.
Good answer, man. Good answer. I always thought him and Valerie Bertinelli looked a lot alike, didn't they?
Yeah, oh my God. I mean, look, you know, we all love Valerie. You know, we were teenage kids.
Oh,
love
yeah.
Raging. But when they got together, it was like, oh my God, this is like the king and the queen.
Exactly.
Like royalty, you know, it's like,
yeah.
We love Van Halen. We love One Day at a Time. This was like the perfect marriage of
it
rock
was.
And roll with TV. Yeah.
Yep. David, thank you, man, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, right?
Good luck with so many endeavors that you got going on now. I don't see how you do it all. It's amazing.
Well, as the lyric says, you got nothing better to do.
Yeah. are you going to have time to tour?
Yeah, you know, and especially being shut down like this, quite honestly, 2020 was okay by me. You know what I mean? I'm glad I had a lot of these things already revved up. And some of them at the starting line, some of them already in the race. And it's just, quite honestly, being home off the road, as much as I miss touring and doing all that,
mm-hmm.
This was a good year to just really put my nose to the grindstone, me and Tom especially together, and really ratchet a lot of these other things up and get these things going. I feel coming into 2021, I'm coming into it strong, you know, like I've got, you know, more stuff now that I'm, you know, pretty deep into, which is great.
Well, you're doing a great job. You are a true Renaissance man, and that's all I got to say about that.
Thank you. We're good. Let's enjoy each other's books.
Okay, man. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Dave. All right, now.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye. Purchase the latest release by David Ellefson entitled No Cover. David Ellefson is keeping things rolling with a new solo album called No Cover, which is released simply under the name Ellefson. Although his name takes top billing, the Megadeth bassist tapped his huge pool of talented friends to cover some of his favorite rock and metal songs from the 70s and 80s. It's available now at Amazon.com. Also, David Ellefson's novel, The Sledge Chronicles, Rockstar Hitman, by David Ellefson and Drew Fortier, Also available at Amazon.com, The Sledge Chronicles, Rockstar Hitman, is the first chapter in the action-packed saga of Sledge, an up-and-coming musician who uncovers a startling quid pro quo in exchange for achieving his dreams of rock stardom. He must enlist as a ruthless killer for a clandestine agency filled with twists, turns, screams, and even laughs. Rockstar Hitman is the cult thriller you've been dying for. Rockstar Hitman is the first in the Sledge Chronicles series and is the first fictional title authored by Grammy Award-winning Megadeth bassist Dave Ellison, co-written by musician, filmmaker, actor Drew Fortier. For more information about Dave Ellison and Megadeth, you can visit www.davidellison.com, the official website. He's also on Facebook, www.facebook.com/David Ellison. Also on Instagram, www.instagram.com/David Ellison Bass. He's also on Twitter, twitter.com/EllisonDavid. And the official website for Megadeth, www.megadeth.com. Very special thanks to Jody Best of Best Bet Promotions for arranging this interview with David Ellison. And, of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, you can always contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And please buy my new book. It's finally out. It's entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1. Chronicles truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com and also at amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. It was reviewed by Literary Titan and got a 5-star rating. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see you next time. Peace, good health, and have a great week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.